Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everybody, to the Saltcast IRL Tuesday show. I'm joined, as always, by my fantastic panel of nerds. Matt Vader likes them thick. What's up, bro? Oh.
wasn't expecting that.
You do, though.
I do, yeah.
No lies are told on this show.
If you're a stick girl. Like,
a lot of bullshit.
Yeah. No lies. Jude is also here.
Hello.
What's up? How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Love those rose-colored glasses.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, you gotta look through them. Gotta look at the world.
Before you talk about Man of Web. Advocatus is also here producing the show. What's up, bro?
I am. And the show isn't Saltcast IRL anymore.
Oh, did we change?
The Salty Nerd Podcast.
I didn't get the memo, I guess. Yeah, Salty Nerd Podcast.
Oh. SNP. I guess I need to like quit hashtagging that then.
This is the SNP. Yeah. Okay, cool. Excellent.
This is.
Ooh, can we do like a little news things? Like, this is the SMP. And then just, you know.
Salty nerd.
It's right on your shirt.
Yeah. Your vintage shirt.
Yeah.
It is, the one that's been washed too many times.
Yeah, this is old. This is an old shirt. This is OG. This is like the original buy. Go to saltynerdstore.com. Get your merch. Okay, so we got a lot of stuff to talk about today. We've got Elon Musk shouting out our friend Chris Gore, which is rad. Madam Web made no money this week. Because it's not out yet. But it's not. It's tracking not to make any money.
He's telling the future.
Yes. Yeah. Well, listen, I watched Jeremy Johns' video this morning on his thoughts on Madam Web. It's not making any money.
He's like Mr. Web. He can see that.
Well, we should probably save this till the segment, right?
Sure.
Yeah, whatever.
What else are we talking about? We're talking about Warriors on Netflix this week. Yeah. Rad.
This week, that is?
I think so, yeah. 16th, okay. I believe, starts. Ozzy Osbourne's got pissed at the Kanye.
Yeah.
Did you guys hear about his Super Bowl commercial?
Yeah.
He made crazy. $7 million to do a Super Bowl commercial and he filmed it on his phone.
Yeah.
I don't know. He spent $7 million.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Just for the ad space.
I was going to talk about that later when we talk about the
whole thing.
He made
like $20 million off of
what?
That. Yeah.
No way. That's
freaking. What else are we talking about?
Is that too big to fail?
What else did I not do homework for?
That's about it. Anyway, welcome everybody to the show. We are going to shout out some of the chat members here. We've got our regulars, Wendy Hunters in the house. What's up? Redheaded Daft Cows here. What's up, Jude?
Present.
Anthony Mark. I'm really bad at reading chats. I'm so sorry, guys. Penny's always here. What's up, Penny? And I think we got some gifted memberships already.
We did. Yeah.
5 memberships from No Money G already. We're halfway to our goal of 10. We get 10 members. You guys get access to some special content.
If we get to 10,
we recorded a doozy for you today.
Well, listen,
that's not members' content.
It's special content.
Yeah.
Listen.
Keep it secret, man.
All right, we'll keep.
You're terrible.
Go to Discord and join up with the members.
We got done dirty today.
They threw us under the bus. Mm-hmm. They were like, "Here, guys,
I'm upset.
Do this," and we were like, "Ooh, it was terrible."
We'll start showing up at people's houses.
Anyway,
yeah, we should let everyone know that if you get a membership during the course of the stream, you can connect Discord to your YouTube channel and then get access to a special Discord or special members area on our Discord. And in addition to that, we also have a ton of members content that's already in a members playlist on our channel. But for those of you who are wondering about the live stream, we're going to be doing 2 members live streams a month as opposed to 1 after every
show.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
So if you're wondering why we're not doing a members live stream after this live stream, that's the reason. It's just because we're going to do 1 live stream for all the members once a month and then 1 live stream for like the upper tier members once a month. So
I saw a chat that made me go, huh?
What?
And then I lost it and I can't find it.
Was it a thing that makes you go, hmm?
Yeah, it was the thing that made me go, hmm. And I can't remember what it was. Oh, Penny took a membership. That was great. Congratulations, Penny. Welcome to the memberships. I hope the rest of you 5 people got awesome memberships as well. And shout out to No Money G.
Yeah, No Money G has been very generous.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great.
So big shout out to No Money.
Oh, it was the somebody asked what the title was referring to, and I don't know what the title of this video was, Kadesh.
What was the title?
It
was
Dune.
It was the Dune that we never
almost
got.
God. This documentary on HBO Max. I think we've dodged a bullet. What's the guy's name?
Jodorowsky.
Alejandro Jodorowsky.
Jodorowsky. Jude has a synopsis for us. Yeah. Take it away.
Are we just going right into it yet?
Are we not?
I don't know. Why are you guys acting
like we've never done this before?
Yeah, I don't know either. Go ahead, Jude.
Did you hit the button?
Oh, Jesus.
We're trying to do things here.
The Dune we never got.
Okay.
Thank God.
You ready?
Yeah, take it away, Jude.
2013, Jodorowsky's Dune, rated PG-13 with a runtime of 1 hour 30 minutes. This had a box office bring home of $661,000.
This hit theaters? This documentary?
Made money somewhere. Yeah, I think it made money in like Canada and somewhere else. But it had a worldwide release.
Okay, all right.
So here's what it's about. Somebody told a crazy person that they'd give him a bunch of money to make whatever movie he wanted. And then in good faith, he and his drug-addled brain set about making the most bonkers adaptation of a book he never read into a movie that never got made. Please discuss.
God. Oh, my God. I was like, okay, this guy's got some ideas. He's got some creativity. He's a bit of a whack job. If you look at some of the movies that he made on his own, they are real weird. Like Jesus was pooping out gold nuggets. Just like, what is happening on screen right now?
Those were the kind of movies that for some reason I feel like this guy over here will make us watch.
Oh God, please.
Someday, when he wants to film school us, and we're like, I don't need
to ever see any of this guy's movies ever. Go do your art.
The Naked Jesus one though was kind of weird.
Shoot. Dude, he had Naked Jesus pooping out gold nuggets.
Well, he's levitating in front of his 12 disciples.
I'm just like, whoa. Somebody was like, yeah, we'll give you money to make Dune. And he's like, okay.
Yeah. They were like, I would love to give you so much money. What do you want to make? And he's like, I would like to make Dune. I've never read it, but I would like to make it. And they were like, yeah, sounds great.
Yeah, a friend of mine told me about this book. I want to make it into a movie.
I need to find my spiritual equals.
My warriors
to make this piece.
I'd like to give a primer on who Jodorowsky is before we dive in.
Educate us, Mr. Kadish.
All right, so Alejandro Jodorowsky, he's a very famous avant-garde kind of like artiste. He started off in Mexico City, and basically he trained to become a mime, and he moved to Paris, where he joined like this mime troupe and perfected his craft. And while he was in Paris, he got into like the avant-garde scene. And basically at the time, like Fellini was like a big thing and stuff like that. And so he got into like filmmaking, and he was like, I've never made a movie before, but I want to make a movie. And so like he made this movie that was like a Western that premiered in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
And it caused riots.
Yeah.
Because it was so off the wall bonkers.
I love this guy.
Yeah. And basically every time they screened it somewhere, like riots would break out, like people would start throwing rocks at the screen and stuff like that.
Jesus.
And so Mexico banned the movie. So like you can't find this movie anywhere because of Mexico. And so Jodorowsky went back to Europe, and someone who saw his banned movie was like, hey, I like the cut of your jib. You want to make another movie?
Right.
And he was like, yeah. And so he made this other movie with his son.
Uh-huh.
And it's like a Western, but it's also like really, really avant-garde. And when it premiered in New York, John Lennon, one of the big Beatles, and his wife Yoko Ono saw it and loved it. And so they recommended to one of their friends who was a film distributor, is like, look, this guy is an artiste.
Mm-hmm.
He deserves all the money in the world. You should distribute his movies. And so the distributor came to him, and he's like, I want to give you money.
All of the money in the world.
All of the money.
I hear you've earned it.
Yeah, to make whatever you want.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, Jodorowsky, he was also a comic book artist, or a comic book writer, I should say.
Mm.
And so like he had done like a little like independent comic book way before Comicsgate was ever a thing. And and so like he was very much into like visualization.
Mm-hmm.
And his goal with his movies was he wanted to, number one, make people feel like they were tripping on LSD.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like when you watch his movies, you want to feel like you're on an LSD trip.
I want people to feel like they are on drugs without having to take any.
Yeah. Exactly.
Movie. He wanted his movies to be the drug.
I could see that.
And then he also wanted to give them a religious experience.
Yeah. Sure.
because I don't know if you guys know this or not, he invented his own religion.
I would like to pass on all of these experiences.
His religion is called psycho-shamanism.
All right.
And it's about like tapping into like the vibrations of the universe in order to like heal yourself and stuff like that. But he's one of these guys who's like, he's the type of dude that I used to run into a lot when I was in like film school, mm-hmm. where they, you know, they're just so manically like brilliant in some ways, and in other ways they're completely off the wall. But he has such a passion for like everything he does.
That's the one thing. That's the one thing I took away from this document. And I know I don't want Chris Gore to be mad at me in the chat. Shout out to Chris Gore.
What's up, bro? He's kind of like, don't you make fun of him.
Don't you make fun of him. Don't fight me, Chris Gore.
Oh, Chris Gore, you can come for me.
I love the dude's passion. Like the documentary showed, I love the passion behind what he wants to do with his movies. I'm not on brand with his type of movie.
Sometimes serial killers are also passionate about what they do.
It's true.
I was watching this documentary. I'm like, okay, I can see where he's going. You know, he's assembling as a team. Like he's mm-hmm. like Captain America with the Avengers or something like that.
Dumbledore's army.
I must have him.
I must have my warriors.
I must go to where he is to find him.
I was kind of just like humming along with this documentary. Like, okay, like going along with the trip. And I'm like, all right, this guy's interesting. Cool. And then when he gets to
Orson Welles
and H.R. Giger, when he was like, I wanted him to do the Baron, the Harkonians. And I was like, oh, okay, now you have my attention.
So we're skipping ahead a little bit, but essentially the modern day version of this guy, Nicholas Winding Refn, I never know how to pronounce his name. So like he's the guy who did Drive mm-hmm. and bunch of other like very avant-garde style.
Yeah. Movies. I did like Drive. That was a good movie.
So he was at dinner with Jodorowsky one time, and Jodorowsky brought him into his study and showed him this visual book that mm-hmm. he had created for his version of Dune.
It was basically all the storyboards put together.
That's kind of what I got from this film, is that this is basically the story of them putting this book together and then the end result.
Yeah. And then Nicholas was like so impressed, because not only did Jodorowsky show him this, but he basically narrated the mm-hmm. movie to him. Mm-hmm. And so like Nicholas Winding Refn was like one of the only ones to actually get to quote unquote see Jodorowsky's version of Dune. And he wanted other people to experience it. And so he commissioned this documentary.
Yeah. This documentary is not actually about a movie. It's about like the biggest graphic novel that was ever made.
You know, one of the things I took away from this, I was watching this and I'm like, you know what? If they release this documentary or not documentary, like a comic book version of this movie, 100% I'd check that out.
Well, they've done that.
Have they?
Yeah. That was the comic book that Jodorowsky made after the movie fell apart.
With this influence from this. Right.
Yeah. He basically took it.
Joss Whedon did the same thing with Buffy.
But it's not Dune, though, is it? Is it Dune's story, just comic book version?
Well, no.
Or is it his own thing?
His version of Dune.
Yeah.
But they changed like the names and like the stuff like that.
It's called Dune.
It's called Sandplay. It's called Tatooine.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the documentary. I was having fun with this. Mm-hmm. I do think this guy's a bit too out there for me. This is not my brand. I don't think I'd be having fun with. I didn't even like really David Lynch's Dune either.
Also, keep in mind, this is the 70s.
Yeah.
What I actually kind of got a kick out of the guy because he's like every weird film guy. You like you have imagining in your head about what all
the stereotypes.
What a weird film guy would be like in the real world.
Yeah.
And this guy's all like, you know,
he's like an evil mastermind.
This guy goes, put my team together.
Yeah.
The thing I love about Jodorowsky in this documentary is that he has such a clear vision of what he wants.
Sure. Yeah.
And nothing stops him from trying to achieve that vision. Well,
they kept flashing at the artistic direction that he was taking, like the ships and the aesthetics of the movie. And it's like this, it's an LSD trip. It's
how
like
about the drop of blood that pops a baby in her?
So just to expand on some of this stuff, so everyone who hasn't watched the documentary knows what we're talking about. So Jodorowsky had a very esoteric take on Dune. He did eventually read the book because he had to write the script for it. And basically what he did was he went out and he assembled a all-star team, the first of which was the most famous comic book artist in France at the time. His name was Mobius, or he went by the name Mobius. And
also a vampire.
and he got this guy to basically come on board and do all the storyboards. And he storyboarded every single shot. I think it was like something like over 3,000 storyboards. And so like, in addition to that, he also got this guy who was famous for creating science fiction book covers,
right,
and designing like spaceships for the book covers, mm-hmm, and stuff like that.
That poor bastard.
And then he went to Hollywood to try to figure out, okay, who can bring these things to life? Who's going to be the special effects artist? And he first went to the guy who did 2001. And the guy was such a prick.
Yeah.
Because he was full of himself. And Yodorovsky's like, I don't like this guy.
He's bad energy.
And so like, while he was in LA, he saw John Carpenter's first movie, a movie called Dark Star. Uh-huh. And the guy who did the special effects on that was a guy named Dan O'Bannon. Mm-hmm. And so he went to Dan O'Bannon. He's like, I want you to make my movie come to life. And Dan O'Bannon's like, I get to live in Paris for free. Okay.
Yeah, sure. All right.
Yeah.
I love it.
That sounds great.
That scene, that part of the documentary where they were talking about them meeting, he was like, this is very special marijuana. Yeah. It's like, oh, that's laced. And he smokes it, right? And the guy's like,
LSD trip.
He's like, I sat there and I was listening to the guy tell me about the story.
and then all of a sudden I was in like outer space.
And then like the kaleidoscope around his head and his eyes were looking at my soul. And I'm like, all right.
Yodorovsky basically, you know.
He drugged the guy to get him to agree to do his movie.
He doped him, got him to agree.
Yeah, he's always like getting people to stay longer. Yeah. Like people would be like, all right, great party. I'm going to go. Would you like to look at my graphic novel?
Yeah.
All right, sure. 4 hours later.
They say during this whole movie is there's one of the guy's comments about how this Yodorovsky is essentially a guru. Mm-hmm. He's very magnetic.
He's like a shaman.
A magnetic personality.
Yeah, yeah.
And his
Jared Leto.
Yeah. But you're not wrong. But his enthusiasm and everything for the project just kind of,
it's infectious.
Yeah. And so
he seems like the guy who can convince you to do anything.
He's able to inspire people, but mm-hmm, he's also, what he was able to do is assemble like a team that pretty much changed how Hollywood made movies. And we're going to get into that a little bit later. But so he created this visual team who was doing like the storyboards and like the concept designs and all this other stuff, trying to figure out how to do like this stuff practically in an actual movie way before Star Wars had ever come out. So like, you know, ILM wasn't really a thing. But then like he starts wanting to cast the movie. And so for like Paul Atreides, he decides to cast his own son because, you know, he had acted in the previous thing and his son was kind of the right age.
But he puts him through like, he's like, okay,
warrior training.
You are going to become Paul Atreides.
Yeah.
Like you're going to learn sword fighting, jujitsu, all this crazy stuff.
You are now Muad'Dib.
Yeah. And the kid's like, all right.
Yeah.
He legit hires the best stunt and fight coordinator.
He hires
in Hollywood.
Fucking Gurney Halleck to train him.
Yeah.
And so like he starts putting his kid through like this 2-year training regimen to become like the ultimate warrior.
Every day for 2 years.
Yeah. I mean, that's...
He's secretly right now a CIA assassin.
Right now, if we found out that Tom Hardy was going to be some new superhero character, mm-hmm, and he goes out and he trains for the next, you know, year and a half to be an expert in this one thing, we'd be like, oh yeah, cool, man. But in the 70s, that shit was unheard of. Yeah. Like, actors didn't do that. We act. We don't do things.
Yeah.
So he was before his time. I mean, I think it wasn't until the 90s with The Matrix when they started like teaching actors how to fight and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's ahead of his time. He's an innovator for sure.
And also he wanted David Carradine for Duke Leto Atreides.
Leto. Mm-hmm.
And the crazy thing about his take on Leto was that in his movie, Leto got castrated by a bull in a bullfight. So he's missing his balls and his wean, right? And so like in order to get pregnant with Jessica, basically, Jessica takes a drop of his blood and transmutes it into semen and puts it into her womb to conceive Paul.
Listen, man, that is the most sci-fi shit I've ever heard. I loved it. I was like, yeah, man, I get it.
And he's like talking about like, I know, I want the camera to like follow the drop of blood
inside the vagina
into her uterus.
Into the uterus. And I was
like, it will explode with life.
And I can
say, I'm like, oh,
like with the limitations of the 70s, I can already imagine what this would look like. And I'm like, oh, this is going to be trippy, but like weird.
But like his whole casting process was so fascinating to me. Like for instance, he wanted Fade Rotha, he wanted Mick Jagger. And so he goes, he finds out where Mick Jagger's party.
Mick Jagger's party.
Yeah. And Mick Jagger's there. And Yodorovsky's like,
all right, Paul Atreides.
Yeah. Yodorovsky like gestures him over. And Mick Jagger's like, me? And like he walks through the party.
No, wait, he went.
and like at the party, Yodorovsky's like, I want you to be in my movie. And Mick Jagger's like, yeah, all right.
Sure. Yeah. my favorite story about the casting has got to be the Emperor.
Salvador Dali.
Salvador, yeah, that guy is already nuts. Like he's got the big old mustache. Well,
you know Dali? You don't know who Dali is?
I don't know anybody.
He's the most famous impressionistic painter. So the guy with the melting clocks and stuff.
Completely.
They named the AI Dali after him.
Cool. No, I'm not aware of this stuff. Sorry. call it ignorance, whatever you want.
So this is another funny story from the documentary where basically, so he wants someone to embody the Emperor Shaddam IV. And so he goes to the most famous impressionistic painter in the avant-garde movement, Salvador Dali. And he says, I want you to be in my movie. And guy's like, yeah, I can be in your movie. And his like side piece, his mistress is right there. And she's like, no, you don't want him in your movie.
And then he's like, she's going to be in the movie too. Yeah, yeah. They're like, all right, I guess.
Yeah. So they cast her as well. But,
princess,
but she's like, you don't understand. He will ruin your movie because he just makes unreasonable demands because he has a huge ego. And the biggest demand he had was Salvador Dali basically said, I will be in your movie, but I demand $100,000 an hour to be in your movie because I want to be the most highest paid actor in Hollywood.
And so it was one of the production guys that was working with him. It was the producer. Yeah. He's like, okay, I got an idea. Like, so he kind of like manipulates this dude. He's like, he asked the director, and I'm not saying his name because do not know how to pronounce it.
Yodorovsky.
He says, how long is this guy actually going to be in the movie? Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, like 5 minutes, like 3 to 5 minutes, maybe at most. And he's like, okay.
Of screen time.
He's like, I'll give you.
Per finished hour.
Like, I'll give you $100,000 per minute. And he's like, oh, yeah.
He's like, I'm the $100,000 minute man.
Yes.
And so like in reality, he'd always be making like, you know, $300,000 to $500,000.
Yeah.
But like, you know, it sounds like, I get paid $3,000.
Yeah, it's just stroking his ego just to get him to do what he wants. Genius move.
Yeah, I think the final story about his casting, which I just loved. So he was a huge Orson Welles fan. Like Orson Welles was like his inspiration for filmmaking. Because when he started making movies, he had no formal training. He didn't know anything about filmmaking. He just watched a lot of Orson Welles
movies. I see movies, I could do it.
Yeah, exactly. And so he's like, Orson Welles would be the perfect Baron Harkonnen. And he found out that Orson Welles lived in France at this time, and he would eat at a certain restaurant because he loved the chef. And this was in Orson Welles's, you know, like fat phase,
his fat era.
He looked like the Baron.
Yeah, yeah. And so like
had his own set of suspensors made.
Yeah, and by this point he'd basically retired from acting. Like he wasn't doing acting anymore. So Yodorovsky tracks down this restaurant that he always goes to, and he sits down with him, and he sends him like a bottle of wine. Like really good wine,
Orson Welles
accepts it and
drinks the whole thing.
drinks the whole bottle, and then he's like, yes, come join me. And so like they come down, and he's, you know, Yodorovsky's telling him all about like his movie and stuff like that, and Orson Welles is like, yeah, but I don't act anymore, and Yodorovsky's like, tell you what, I will hire this chef, your favorite chef, and every day on my movie, he will cook for you. He will serve you your favorite meal. And Orson Welles like,
I guess I act again.
He's like, sir, you had my curiosity, but now you have
my attention. Yeah, it's a lot of that, right? He goes to these crazy famous people, and he's like, hey, you're going to do this for me.
He just meets crazy with crazy head on.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, but he knows how to get to people. That was one of the things that I learned about this guy watching this documentary show. You look like you have thoughts.
I've had thoughts for the last 5 minutes.
Go for it, man. Talk to me.
Because, you know, there's these, they say these movies, this movie, this thing influenced a lot of stuff. And when you said the drop of blood and we follow the camera up into the
vagina,
the hoo-ha and up the thing into the, you know who ripped that off?
Who?
Look Who's Talking. The opening.
Whoa, dude.
That was the opening scene of that movie.
Wow.
It was Jodorowsky.
I haven't thought about that movie in a long time.
That fucking Dennis Quaid movie.
Interspace.
Yeah. With just like the little spermies like, come on, guys, let's go.
Woo. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it's like, I'm going to be first.
That's a trip.
Jodorowsky.
So, when did that movie come out?
I don't know.
90s or something?
But for some reason, that got lodged in my brain and it kind of short-circuited me a little bit.
This guy's just been thinking about sperm and tubes the whole time.
It's like, what if we put a camera in a vagina? What's going to happen
next? That's weird.
I was on board, this guy, right? He's a little crazy. Okay, a little artsy-fartsy. It's not my brand, but I get it. I love the passion. The art direction, when they whipped out Giger, and they were like, yeah, this guy's going to do the Harkonnens. And I was like, oh, shit. Okay, yeah, they got a Giger in this thing? Okay,
and
I'm
at this point, he was a completely unknown.
Yeah. And that's what I liked. He was like the first, because Alien wasn't until 79. And this is like 5 years before that, 5 or 6 years before that. So cool. I was like, this is interesting. But then at the end of the documentary, when he's talking about his final vision of the movie, he's like, he's very passionate. He's talking and he's like, and the end of the story is going to be a little different. I'm going to rape Frank Huber. I'm going to rape him, but with love.
Rape him with love.
I'm going to change the story. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
Yeah, you want to tell people what the ending of his movie was?
Like the planet was Jesus the whole time. It came to life.
No. What happens is basically Fade Rotha, in his final battle with Paul Atreides, kills Paul, which doesn't happen in the books, because basically by killing Paul, you're destroying all the other
books. The whole rest of the series. Yeah,
exactly. So, but Paul dies, and then his consciousness goes into everyone who's ever met him. And so everyone becomes Paul Atreides. And then the Dune planet...
They all become the Reverend Mother.
the Dune planet becomes a paradise. All of a sudden, just like water and lush greenery and stuff like that. And then the planet flies off into space to spread Paul's consciousness among the rest of the universe. It becomes a spaceship, essentially.
Yeah, hard pass. Sorry. No, I've had enough experiences recently with people changing source material to fit their own little ideas and to put their thumbprint on things.
My immediate thought was, no, man.
Why are you kicking me?
Well, I'm trying to stretch out.
I thought you were trying to tell me something. Like, don't, you're fucking up over here, man. Shut up. And I'm like, what did I say?
You're ruining it.
My foot up his leg.
Oh, well, it was funny because when they were interviewing Jodorowsky, he's like, yes, I know that this was not the ending in the book, and people who like the book will not like this ending, but I feel like I had to rape the story.
But then he goes, with love.
Yeah, he goes like, with love.
And I'm like, nah, dude, nah. Hard pass.
Like, that makes it okay.
Sorry.
You put like an Antonio Banderas when you do that. With love.
With love.
With love.
That's when he lost me. It was like,
raped. He said, with love.
Oh,
excuse me.
But what's crazy is like, so he creates this like, this thick visual book.
Uh-huh.
And back then they said this was like before Xerox and like all this other stuff. And so like basically they created 8 of these books that they had to do by hand, essentially. So you had Mobius redoing all the storyboards. You had, the concept art guys doing all the spaceship art and the costuming and stuff like that. And then they go to Hollywood and they start pitching this stuff to studios. And they sit down, they give the studios these books. And Jodorowsky goes through it, and the studios are all like, wow, this is amazing that you've done all this work. We want to do this, but the movie's got to be 90 minutes or less. And Jodorowsky's like, no, I will not limit my work.
Dare you rape me?
Yeah, he's like, if I want to make a 12-hour movie, I will make a 12-hour movie.
Yeah,
And the studio guys are like, we're gonna pass.
They're gonna pull the plug on this whole thing.
And so, like, after they did the rounds in Hollywood and nobody bit, essentially the producers, who had already sunk like some like $5 million out of a $15 million budget, and at the time $15 million was a lot of money for a studio for a motion picture, and so like they ended up selling the rights to Dino De Laurentiis. And Dino De Laurentiis
is like the last thing you want to have happen to the rights to your movie.
Yeah. So what Dino De Laurentiis did is the first thing he did was he fired Jodorowsky. He's like, I'm not working with you, buddy. And then he brought in Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
And so like Ridley Scott was going to be the guy who directed Dune. And so Ridley Scott came in and basically De Laurentiis handed him the team that Jodorowsky had built. So like he got Geiger, he got Mobius, you got like all these guys, Dan O'Bannon. And so Ridley Scott started working on Dune and he just realized like, this movie's not really for me. And so he backed out, but he took all the guys with him to work on Alien because Dan O'Bannon was the writer of Alien and Geiger was the guy who did all the art stuff. And so he went on and did, Alien. And all these studios that had this like huge, like $5 million, visual book, kept it in their archives, but like people who had heard the story in Hollywood would go and like they'd sneak peeks at this thing, And you see like it, yeah. it permeate throughout like tons of like major, like
to this day,
like Raiders of the Lost
yeah.
Ark
yeah, yeah.
and stuff like it's that.
Pretty, very influential for mm-hmm. never being
made. Oh yeah. They went in there and they like cherry picked everything they liked about it. They were like, oh, this is a cool idea. This is a cool idea.
Yeah,
and like, then like, they put it in these other movies.
Like Jodorowsky's visions was like so ahead of its time. Like he wanted to open the movie with like a huge tracking shot through outer space. Mm-hmm. And the technology to do that just wasn't there. But eventually, like, I think they did it in Contact, the Jodie Foster movie. And Jodorowsky's just sitting there. It's like, these motherfuckers are stealing all my shit.
He's okay.
Oh, I almost forgot. So he goes and once Lynch gets the green light to do Dune, and he's like, I was not going to watch it. I cannot watch it. Right? He's very, like, he's passionate about my work. This is my baby, and this guy freaking stole it from me. He raped it. You know what I mean? Like, he's talking about it. He's like,
no.
What?
That would make a terrible t-shirt. I raped him with love.
No.
With love.
That's not on a merch idea, bro.
maybe just sit this one out for a minute.
I rape him with love.
Nobody's gonna wear that.
Just it like that. Jodorowsky.
Yeah, 1977. Yeah.
Make it a quote.
Put it in quotes. It'll be fine.
Poster.
Yeah. Do one of those like. Like people in the world, and like Jodorowsky. All right,
it makes total sense now.
Jesus Christ!
Sorry, I got these things they stick, and then I
like we were about to go somewhere, and now it's just
no.
Gone. Well, Jodorowsky. So he was very bitter about losing Dune, and when David Lynch's Dune came out, he didn't want to see it, like Alex has said. And then Alex, when he decided he was going to go see it,
I cheered because it was terrible.
Yes,
I'm like, man, I get it. I'm on board again.
Right.
This guy had me on a roller coaster ride of emotions, right? I'm like, this is cool. No. Yes. No.
He was very entertaining.
So you guys both watched it for the first time this week.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And.
What, Lynch's?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So I watched this documentary, and then immediately after finishing this documentary, I watched
back to back
David Lynch's Dune.
All right.
Wow.
Yeah. It was
what a thing.
And you lived. Yeah.
I had to watch Masters of the Universe. No, yeah, I watched David Lynch's Dune for the first time. I've seen bits and pieces, of course. It's very iconic, and it's got a lot of stuff in there. I do feel like they took a lot of inspiration from this guy's
100%.
Like they were like, oh yeah, let's take that idea. Like take that
cherry picking.
They cherry picked a whole bunch of stuff, and then David Lynch did his little weird thing on it.
Yeah, Lynch is like Jodorowsky light.
Yeah. Now that I see that guy, and then now I see Lynch, and I'm like, oh, he's like a softball version. Yeah, of this dude.
That's why we did the watch party last night because I knew I was going to be coming off of watching the Jodorowsky thing, and I wanted to compare just to see what.
How long is the Lynch Dune?
2 hours.
Yeah, it's long.
20 minutes.
I think there's actually a
six hour version.
There's like a super extended version, but
I will kill myself.
I actually really like Lynch's Dune.
Yeah, I do too.
But the funny thing about this is that so Jodorowsky was so disappointed with this that he basically retired from filmmaking, and he became like one of the premier like comic book guys in Europe. Like that was his like career, and basically he took what he had planned for Dune and turned it into like this massive series that he did with Mobius in terms of like, self-publishing their comic books. And he's kind of like this legendary figure in Europe from like the avant-garde era. And because of this documentary, he actually hooked up with his old producer who was also interviewed for this documentary, and he's decided to start making films again.
Mm-hmm.
So we may be getting even more crazy stuff.
How new is this film?
Which one?
This Jodorowsky's Dune. This documentary.
It's a couple of years.
Yeah, it's been out.
2013.
For a while.
So it's 11 years old.
Mm.
He's not still alive.
He's not?
No.
Jodorowsky's still alive.
Yeah.
Because he was 84 when they made this.
No, I don't.
That's what he said it in the documentary.
Really?
He said, I'm 84. I only have another
year. I'll look it up right
now. Another year ago to live.
Oh, man.
So, yeah. And then they laughed.
Another year or two?
That's what he said in the movie.
That guy's still Yeah, that guy still fucks.
That dude's done enough drugs. He's going to be around for a while.
I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm just saying.
No, I get it. I hope he watches the new Dune. Because I'll tell you what. Of course, the story is super influential. I like Dune. Not a big fan of Lynch in general. I don't really like his movies anyway. So his version of Dune was kind of like, ugh. But this new one that just came out recently, and then we're going to see part two next month. I really like that movie. I thought it was awesome. I love the visuals. I love the ideas. I love how they're presenting it. It's much more palatable for me than Lynch's Dune.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope this guy watches that. Maybe he'll feel differently about it. Maybe he'll think this one's better. I don't know.
Well, you know, what's crazy. So like when Dune, the book came out, like there was no like really art associated with it. It was just like straight up text. And it was because of Jodorowsky and his visuals for the movie he wanted to make that Dune became this like weird acid trippy, like esoteric style of sci-fi. And that translated over into Lynch's version, and it translates somewhat over into the new Villeneuve version. And without Jodorowsky, we might have had like an entirely different version of Dune if like it had been developed after Star Wars had come out. Star Wars cribbed a lot from Dune.
Sure.
He is 94 years young today.
Still alive.
Right. Kicking it.
Good for him.
Love it. I hope he hits 100.
Mm-hmm. He probably has like a 20-year-old girlfriend too.
Of course
Don't
he does.
Say it.
What? Half plus seven?
No, I just said don't.
Well, you primed him. He wasn't even thinking about it.
I was going to say
it's your fault, Jude.
But I think he made another movie with his son.
That sounded about right.
Recently.
Yeah.
The one that he trained to literally become Paul Atreides.
Right.
That dude, I'm surprised he's not in more movies. If he's got that kind of a training and he's already kind of like an actor, I feel like...
They all know his dad's a psychopath.
Probably a ninja.
He's probably a ninja. He probably hangs out with Len Kabuzinski.
Yeah.
Probably. So overall, I think we all liked it, yeah?
It was a very educational and interesting documentary. But I know I'm going to disagree with Chris Gore on this one, but I do think we dodged a bullet.
100%!
I'm sorry, Chris. Yeah.
If this was the Dune that we got instead of Lynch's Dune, like...
It would have been even crazier than the Lynch Dune. And the Lynch Dune is what people set the standard of crazy fucking adaptations.
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of enjoyed it. I just watched it last night.
Did you like Lynch's?
Yeah. You're a pothead now.
I like Lynch's Dune a lot too, but I like David Lynch. So if you're not like a David Lynch fan, I can see why people.
Yeah. Oh, I've seen Eraserhead, and that movie fucked me up.
Yeah.
I cautiously watched Lynch movies ever since then. That was a fucking weird movie, dude. Yeah.
Try watching El Topo.
No, I'm not ever watching.
I'm good.
Maybe, you know what? I'll watch El Topo if Chris Gore comes and watches it with me. Then I'll watch it. Not doing it by myself. I can't do it. Sorry.
So he can sit here and tell us what's good.
Yes. Okay. Because I can feed off that passion.
I can let him.
When Jude is passionate about a really shitty movie, it makes me enjoy the shitty movie more.
Because
I'm like, I gotcha. So I've got to have a partner in crime with this. I'm not going to go in solo and just raw dog freaking David Lynch.
You want to come over?
Or El Tolo. Do you want to come over and watch El Toro together?
Yeah. El Topo?
Sorry.
No, we're going to watch El Toro.
The bull.
It's a very fat tuna.
It's Toro's bull. What are you talking about?
The Japanese version.
Oh, okay.
Toro's tuna.
All right. Anyway, that's it for Dune. We are going to be continuing our coverage. I think we're going to probably talk about David Lynch's movie next week, maybe. And then leading up to the new part two Dune.
Okay.
And then we'll cover probably part one as well. It's Dune month for us, guys. Basically, we're all prepping.
Right. Cool.
We're prepping for Dune. But thank you all for hanging. I do want to shout out the entire chat and everybody watching.
Yeah, thank you so much for hanging in there.
Yeah,
that was weird.
Despite our massive glitch with our computer, all 45 of you guys hung out and just chilled.
Yeah.
And we're like, well, we'll hang out with you. So thank you so much. That really does mean a lot. Like I'm thank you for your patience. Really do appreciate it. William Forbes for $5 says, Alex, still no Sasquatch. What the hell? Man, it's all good. Actually, if I'm actually a fan of David Lynch's Dune, Nickelback still slaps. Yeah, dude. I don't give a fuck what the haters say. Good on you, V. I love it. I was just going to say, I have my app pulled up where I do all my graphic design stuff. And I swear to God, like, because I created this t-shirt like a long time ago as like a joke. And I sent it to my friends. And I thought I might still have it in my phone saved somewhere. I can't find it, which is really bummed out. But I do have a ton of t-shirt ideas. Here's all my t-shirt ideas. These are all my shirts.
With love.
With rape the t-shirts with love.
I don't think they want you to do that.
It's a fucking bumper sticker idea for V. I'm going to make it and slap it on the back of his van.
No, you're not.
Or his Jeep and just be like, wait until he sees it.
No, it should say, please rape me with love. And just put it on the back of his Jeep. Yeah. Just be
like, here you go, buddy. God, what a trip that would be.
Put it on a magnet. That way you can move it around.
Hide it in different places. Yeah. 1,000%. Love it. You crazy kid. All right. I'm sorry, I gotta get back on the ball now where I'm a little lost. What's the next topic we had in line for us? So Jude, your addition to this show has now become
who's fighting?
What's the gossip this week?
What's the gossip with Jude?
Yeah, so it's just kind of happened the last couple of weeks. And I was like, now I'm going to try and find a new feud every week. I can't guarantee that somebody will be fighting every week. Somebody probably will be fighting every week, but I can't guarantee that it will be interesting. However, I mean, I think probably most people have heard about this by now, but just in case, if you haven't,
I haven't.
Kanye West asked for permission to sample one of Ozzy's songs. Mm-hmm. And Sharon, who is basically the head of the business, Sharon Osbourne said, "You anti-Semite fuck, I would never give you permission for goddamn jack shit."
Is that a quote?
Pretty much.
That was spot on.
Pretty fucking much. Pretty good. She was like, "No, I'll spell it out for you. N-O. If you can't understand that, I'll have it translated for you in other languages." She was basically like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
I will never give you permission for anything. Well, Kanye did it anyway.
Wow.
And he made the song. And then he had this big record release party and he plays the song and everybody has their phones up and they're recording it. And everybody has it posting on their social medias and shit. And Sharon fucking finds out and Sharon goes, "You fucked with the wrong Jew this time." Do you know who Sharon Osbourne is?
She is connected.
Her father
was a freaking thug.
He's the Al Capone of band management.
Yeah.
He's the founder of, I think, Jet Records. And like I was telling Kadish this story the other day when like the feud came out, and I was like, he's basically the Tony Soprano of band management. Mm-hmm. And then I started researching it, and then the internet said, "Nah, bitch, he's the Al Capone." And I was like, "Yeah, that you right."
That tracks.
Yeah, this guy kidnapped and tortured an accountant that worked for him because he was like, "I feel like this guy's stealing." and you know who went to jail for it? Who he had take the rap for him? His son.
Whoa.
His son showed up at some point at like some hotel that he was holding this guy at. Mm-hmm. He's torturing this guy. He has his son show up for probably to bring him a sandwich. His son goes down for it. Serves time for it. Not done.
All good.
Don's like,
yeah. Yeah. My kids. That's why I gave birth to you.
Right. Where's Steven Tyler at? Okay, this guy sicked his dogs on his pregnant daughter when she came to his house because he didn't like her relationship with Ozzy after he fired Ozzy.
Sharon.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I know. I've seen a couple of her interviews on podcasts and stuff. She's got some stories.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is the family that Kanye is messing with.
And this is the business that she has grown up in.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So like when her father fired Ozzy, Sharon took him on as a solo client and it caused this 20-year rift between her and her father.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it wasn't just, "We're not talking to each other right now." It was
like battle.
It was like we're firing Molotov cocktails at each other. Like it was fucking brutal. And this is who Kanye has decided I'm going to war with. Because Kanye thinks he's unfucking touchable.
Yeah.
So what happened?
Basically, that's what happened. Like he did it anyway. Well, Sharon said you fucked with the wrong guy. Like this woman has sent boxes of her own shit to people in the mail. And like, Sharon will take it to the mattresses. Nothing has happened yet, but basically, like, she has declared war on Kanye. And Kanye's just like, "What? I'm Kanye."
Yeah, with his teeth. His new grill.
"I can do whatever I want. You guys want some shoes?"
Billionaires doing billionaire shit, man.
Yeah. So I can't wait to see what happens. Like Kanye is going to turn up missing and then he's going to resurface. He's going to be missing like a fucking ear or something.
Well, didn't Kanye, like when he had like his last meltdown where he was wearing the mask and stuff, didn't he like come out as like a raging, like anti-Semite?
Yes. Yes.
Well, yeah, he did. He said, I don't even know, but he said some stuff that a lot of people didn't like. And I know recently, I think it was at the Super Bowl or something like that. He was wearing like an all black with Jesus on his forehead or something like
that. I don't know, man.
This dude's super weird.
And he hasn't been right since his mother died.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, speaking of the Super Bowl with Kanye, this is kind of interesting. So he did a zero production budget commercial where he basically filmed himself on his phone talking about like his merch store or something like that.
Yeah, he's in his car. Like sitting in traffic and he's just like, oh, I think I'll record this, this Super Bowl commercial. I spent all my money
on my Galaxy
buying the ad time. So I don't have any money for a commercial. I just put $1 billion in my mouth though. Not talk like that. I hope you guys like my new album because it sounds like that.
Oh yeah. he has platinum teeth now.
Yeah. He's got a full grill. It doesn't even have teeth anymore. He just has like jaws from James Bond.
He's on that.
Yeah.
Looney Tunes.
So his Super Bowl commercial.
He's a T-1000 under there.
His Super Bowl commercial cost him $7 million.
Yeah.
For this shot on his phone ad. Mm-hmm. And the amount of money he made was something like $30 million. I think
it was for his website where he was selling shoes and I think some shirts, maybe some pants too, but everything was $20. Mm-hmm. So I guess he just sold a bunch of shit that one night. And then I guess he came out the next day and was like, if you paid $200 for the shoes before the sale, I'll just refund you. And now he's like giving away money.
Well, he wanted to make everything on the store affordable for people because he wanted like, you know, everyone to have like an equal shot at like purchasing his merch, I guess. But what this tells me is that Sharon's probably going to go after, you know, a $30 million settlement or something like that.
Yeah.
Just to get like all that money that he made off of the Super Bowl.
Yeah. Moral of the story, like that never fucking pays off unless you are a completely unheard of indie artist and no one's ever going to hear your song. You can't get away with this shit. You
can't sample other people's work and then not credit them at all.
Yeah.
Or at least get the permission or something.
Yeah. Like Sting sued Puffy for the Every Breath You Take sampling because he didn't fucking get permission for it.
Mm-hmm.
And now guess who gets all that money from that song?
Sting.
Yeah.
Well, this isn't the first time that Kanye's done something like this.
No,
like,
yeah, he's done this before.
But in particular, there was something he did with Taylor Swift where he had a lyric that... you know, mentioned her specifically and it wasn't in a good, like light and basically called her a bitch, I think. But he called up Taylor Swift to get her okay with using the lyric.
Mm-hmm.
And Taylor was like, yeah, I don't think I'm not comfortable with that. I don't want you to use that lyric. And so he went and used it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And actually Kim Kardashian came out hard against Taylor Swift in that scenario. And it was like this, like, it goes back to that feud that they had when like Kanye was supposed to give her that award.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah. So like Kim Kardashian and Taylor Swift had like a Snapchat war over this lyric. And Kim was like, oh, I have screenshots of you saying it was okay on Snapchat. And Taylor was like, yeah, no, what you probably have is me saying, yeah,
don't use it.
No, please don't.
I don't get all this stuff. I also don't really understand the whole sampling thing. Like, just can't you just make your own melody? Like,
when was the last time you heard an original beat from Kanye?
I cannot tell you.
I don't listen to Kanye, so I couldn't tell you.
I couldn't. If you played a Kanye song, I wouldn't know. I don't think I can remember a time I've ever listened to him specifically. And if he has a super famous song and I know it, it'd be just because it's super famous.
I know every word to Power.
But one of the most, the best example of this kind of thing happening is when Vanilla Ice sampled Led Zeppelin.
Queen.
Was it Queen?
Yeah.
It was Queen. And he's like, no, it's not that sample. It's da 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 da. Not da 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 da. Yeah. And I'm like,
wasn't that the David Bowie thing?
Yeah, I thought that was David.
It was David Bowie?
Yeah, it was David Bowie.
Under pressure.
Yeah.
Queen. Yeah.
No, that's David Bowie.
Google it.
Yeah, it's Queen.
You don't need to Google it.
Yeah.
I'll bet you $20.
I don't have $20. Who does number two work for?
I'm pretty sure it's David Bowie.
No, Jude's on it. That's the only, like, I don't get it, man. Like, just make your own melodies. Make
okay, it's Queen and David Bowie.
Both? Yeah. We're both right. We both owe each other $20.
Everybody wins.
Well, what do you think is going to happen to Kanye now that
he's going
to
get sued?
He's going to get sued out the freaking ass.
And they'll settle and it'll move on.
Yeah, he'll settle out of court. He'll pay him whatever and then it'll be gone.
Well, I'm wondering if his defense is going to be he was off his meds when he made the decision or something like that.
Who knows, man? I don't know. How many times can you use that excuse?
You're a celebrity. You can do it anytime you want.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
Yeah, but like, it's not like he just like slugged somebody in the face. He made a song and he's getting money from the song. So I wouldn't be surprised if Sharon like made him take down the song and you can't use it anymore. Well, even though it's already out there.
I'm surprised that his label didn't like, you know.
Right. I think they should settle it in the street, live stream it, mm-hmm. and just both make a shit ton of money.
Celebrity death match.
Yes.
I could see Ozzy biting his head off.
Ozzy's getting up there.
I think Ozzy was in a celebrity death match in an old cartoon, wasn't he?
Maybe.
He just eats people's heads.
I feel like there was an episode of Celebrity Deathmatch where Ozzy was one of the fighters.
The Prince of Darkness.
I could be wrong. It's been a very long time.
Yeah, yeah. How old is Ozzy now?
He's getting there.
80s, right?
I think he's 70 something. Yeah. I'll look it up.
Yeah, look it up. Look it up. Look, that should be a t-shirt. Look it up.
I heard Kelly's gotten her act together.
I haven't heard anything from her.
Kelly's 75. He's 75.
That's it?
Yep.
Oh, he's young. All that
he's younger than our president.
He's younger than Yadorovsky.
That dude's on peyote somewhere. Don't give it a shit.
Yeah. He's out there with his church group for the religion that he created.
Yeah, he's out in this cosmic sphere just living it up.
So that's who's fighting.
So that's who's okay. So that's the news for Kanye versus Sharon. I wouldn't fuck with Sharon Osbourne.
No, hell no.
Hard pass.
Yeah.
Hard pass.
I mean, she created Ozfest. She's the only reason. Like when they fired him, he was a fucking mess.
Yeah.
And she's the reason he had a solo career.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a tiger.
All right. Before we move on to True Detective, Katie's just going to take up that segment.
Ooh.
I just wanted to shout out Nerdy Neo real quick because he made, it was a while ago. I apologize for taking this long to get to it, but I thought it was a very sly and interesting comment. He said, did Kadish bypass the compressor? Yes. The answer to that question is yes. Kadish did some magic. I don't know what he did. I'm not even sure if you knew what you did, but things work now, which is good.
I said, I think he just needed to get it up to 88 miles an hour.
I love that comment too. The Back to the Future references were in there.
So these guys for months have been giving me crap about my Alienware computer. The minute we switch it out.
It was worse.
Listen, it didn't blue screen of death, though. Yeah.
This was worse.
I don't know what's worse.
Nerdy Neo is trolling my outfit again today.
Oh, I said the same thing. As soon as I walked in, I was like, freaking Jude, on it again. Look at that.
She always looks good.
She always looks great. She's got this crazy gothic
crazy.
Princess like thing going on.
Vampira.
Yeah.
I like it. Yeah.
Good for you. Keep it up. I don't know where you get your style from, but. Good.
The Anne Rice closet. Collection.
Your closet.
I've literally worn this before with you.
Never noticed.
It's the Anne Rice collection. From Macy's.
Wouldn't it be rad if Jude had her own clothing collection? Yeah. Just like, you know, putting it out there somewhere, teaming up with some designer.
This is something you could wear to a funeral. This is something if
or
you were
a party.
Sitting in a cemetery just contemplating your life.
She has a weird accent for no reason.
Yeah, it's just for the clothing.
This is my vampire accent.
This is something you could wear if you're going to lose your virginity to a vampire.
This is how I
If you're going to be a sandwich for a vampire, this is what you can wear.
You don't fuck their sandwiches.
Jude made
Nandor
watch this trailer for Lisa Frankenstein.
Lisa Frankenstein. It looks good.
It looks bad.
Wait.
It's terrible.
Lisa, what is it?
Lisa Frankenstein.
I think it's already out of theaters.
No, it's not.
Who's in it?
You guys. It's like an 80s movie where this girl is just very gothic and she sits in a cemetery and she reads poetry and she like falls in love with the idea of this man whose grave that she sits on. And she like, there's like a statue of him and she's like, ah. Oh. Like she romanticizes this version of him. And then he like Frankensteins one night because she made a wish and like, I don't know, lightning hits or something. Uh-huh. But it's set in the 80s.
Oh, okay.
And you've seen, what is that? Bette Midler Halloween movie with Sarah Jessica Parker.
The witches.
Hocus Pocus?
Hocus Pocus. Billy from Hocus Pocus, it's giving those vibes. And like a lot of people who like that movie love Billy. And it's giving like the energy that Billy brought into that.
And it stars Ant-Man's daughter as a...
Oh, yeah. That's where I knew her from. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That seems like...
It looks really fun. It looks really cute. It looks kind of romantic, but I'm just going to go watch it with some girls.
It's girl night.
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Gothic girl night.
Yeah. So Tom's fiance and Nadia both said they'll go see it with me.
You show me the trailer.
We're all going to hold hands.
All right. All right, guys.
I'm going to drink red wine. Watch your...
Maybe. True story. One time we went to the movies and it was Kadish and me and I had a girlfriend with me and then Tom came with us too. Mm-hmm. We were all standing at the concession stand and I asked my girlfriend Tracy because we drank the same thing. So I was like, you want to just get a bottle of wine and we'll share it? And she was like, yeah, let's just do that. So I ordered a bottle of wine and the concession kid was like, I mean, if that's what you want to do, I guess I can't tell you how to live your life. And he like walked away. Yeah. He walked away to get the bottle of wine. And we all just looked at each other like, is it this kid's last day at work or something? And he was like, here, did you want me to open it for you too? And we were like, well, yeah. I want you to open it
for me. Was it corked or was it a screw top?
It was corked. It's like, what is this fucking kid's problem? And then at one point I came back to like, we were watching the movie and I came back to like order something else and he went, oh, you're back. Fuck you, guy.
Whoa.
I like this kid.
I like this kid. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's that restaurant you go to where they just talk mad shit to you?
Dick's. Dick's Last Resort.
Dick's Theaters.
Yeah.
It's like, you want your wine? You want more wine? Yeah.
What do you want? Popcorn?
It's like,
you want butter on it?
I bet
fetch.
You fucking do. Marge works there. Yeah.
It's a movie.
Marge's grandson.
She's just there making your popcorn. You want butter on this too?
She's got a lit cigarette hanging out of her mouth the whole time.
You want some red wine with your popcorn?
One time I ordered a drink at the movie theater and the kid said, well, I'm not 21, so I have to go get a manager to get that drink for you. And then we both just stood there and looked at each other and he said, so do you still want it? I said, what do you mean?
Don't get me.
Go get your fucking manager,
don't
kid.
Don't get between Jude and her boots. It's like, of course I do.
The fuck do you mean do I still want it? Your problem is not my problem. Go get your manager.
I would have been like, bro, just give it to me. I don't give a shit. I'm not going to tell on you.
Yeah.
What do you think? I'm going to rat you out? Oh, this kid's 16. Give me up.
What are you going to demerit if somebody orders booze in your line?
Demerit.
Just go get your manager.
I mean, it is kind of weird that you can get wasted at a movie theater
now.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, I'm
you know how many shitty movies this guy's dragged.
Well, hold on. Is that nationwide or is that a Vegas thing?
I mean,
is that just a Vegas thing?
I've never done that until I came to Vegas.
Yeah,
I mean,
I'm sure it's more common.
Alamo Draft House.
Yeah, that's true.
Like Texas.
So it's like the first thing, but.
But these aren't special theaters.
Being a little bit Texas.
well. AMC's and stuff like that as a franchise. Mm-hmm. They've been incorporating bars and liquor because they're having to find ways to compete now.
Right.
Yeah. Like, well, they're like, nobody wants to buy a $7 bag of M&Ms, but they'll buy a $9 cocktail.
Or a $15 IPA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
ridiculous.
Nuts. Yeah, it's nuts.
Nuts.
Yeah.
It's like,
you get like 32 ounces of freaking shitty apple cider, whatever.
Yeah.
For like $13.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's just very strange. It's a strange concept to me to be able to go to the bar.
Astro Nerd Boy says certain movie theaters have booze. Yes, certain. I don't know if it's like a nationwide thing though, but Vegas definitely. You could buy booze at a gas station in Vegas.
Yeah.
William Forbes knows what's up.
Heck yeah, Jude. I'm looking forward to Female Frankenstein.
Yeah.
I'm a fan of Hocus Pocus, so that makes sense. Okay, right on. I didn't see that. I barely watched the Super Bowl. Once I saw... Who's the chick sitting? Oh, we're going to get into conspiracy stuff. Maybe I should save that for later. All right.
What?
You guys didn't see that?
What?
Ice Spice.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. No, she was legitimately, every time the camera would go on to Taylor Swift, she was sitting like adjacent to her.
Just hanging out.
No. No.
She was throwing up satanic.
She was legitimately, every time she was on screen, you can look it up. Every single time that woman popped up on the Jumbotron, she would go, I'm not joking. She would do like the fucking weird like Illuminati symbols, like she was casting a spell. Yeah, basically.
Like, I'm going to fuck you.
Yeah.
With love.
With love.
She was wearing an upside down
cross. Upside down cross. The whole
deal. Now I gotta go
find I'm not even joking, dude. I'm like, I know I usually kind of goof around with the conspiracy theory stuff, but I watch this and I'm like, why is she doing that every single
time? Well, according to you, Taylor Swift is the queen of the Church of Satan.
Just put another bell on that one. Yeah. That's legit. Jesus.
Did you see the roller skater that fell off the stage during Usher's performance?
No. That would have been awesome.
Oh, man. I forgot Usher was a thing. I was like, who is this guy? Oh, yeah, Usher. From
it was apparently the greatest halftime show ever.
They said it every year.
It didn't.
Nobody liked Rihanna when she was pregnant.
Yeah, she was terrible.
That was awful.
Yeah.
Most halftime shows suck.
I've watched a few on YouTube lately.
Mm-hmm. Just to kind of catch up on them?
Yeah.
You know who the best one was?
Prince.
Michael fucking Jackson.
I was going to say, when I was a kid and I saw Michael Jackson do the halftime show where like he has his doubles like mm-hmm. pop out around mm-hmm. the stadium, then he pops up there. He just stands there like a minute.
And the whole crowd just, yeah! That was the best halftime show. Everybody else since then has just been downhill.
The best was Janet Jackson.
Oh, get out of here with that nonsense. Justin Timberlake, right?
Yeah.
Look at my nipple.
They did it.
Yeah, exactly.
Perfect.
And they were like, it was a wardrobe malfunction. I'm like, no, it's not. You meant to do that.
I think my two favorite are Lady Gaga. She put on a really good show. And the one, was it last year when all the Death Row Records guys were doing at LA with Snoop and Dr. Dre?
I've seen Snoop live before. Yeah, it was so boring. Was really
You know who needs to be? They need to bring rock and roll back to the halftime shows. They need to get Metallica 100%. Out there or something like that.
Hit our goal.
Yeah.
Did we?
Oh, no, wait. No, we didn't. Sorry. No. Sorry. I saw member.
That's a member chat.
Okay. So, we got William Forbes, a super chat. Member chat for 7 months. Thank you, Keely. I like your outfit, Jude.
Thank you.
There you go. It's what someone would wear to make another woman think that you're a vampire,
nice.
But you're not. And they actually are vampires.
Aww.
That is probably the biggest compliment she's gotten all day. And I complimented her. What is ducks? I don't get it. What's the ducks for? Keely, explain yourself. All right. Back on track.
Chat?
I don't think so, do we?
We still are trying to get five more memberships.
Five more memberships to complete the goal. Okay, so the next topic we have is, of course, True Detective Kadish. This is your segment, sir. Take it away.
Yeah, so Jude and I have been watching the fourth season of True Detective called Night Country. It's starring Jodie Foster.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a completely batshit insane season.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't like it, but there are people out there who are obsessed with it, mm-hmm. like Jude.
I'm pretty into it. I'm very into it. I like it a lot. And I love that there's like this connection to season one and none of the other seasons are connected to anything, apparently. It's just, I think it's just super interesting. And I like a little spook in my show.
Yeah, one of the weird things about this season is that apparently they've been including supernatural elements, which was not a factor in the previous three seasons. But they could be explained away by mental illness or something like that. But anyway, I was fascinated to find out that the main central mystery of season four is based off of two real life mysteries that are just batshit insane.
Mm.
So I'm going to tell you guys what the central mystery of season four is, and then I'm going to go into the actual real life stories that inspired this season.
All right.
So, in the fictional town of Ennis, Alaska, eight scientists working for the Salal Research Station all disappear one night, and the local police are baffled. The TVs are left on, food that was prepared remains uneaten, laundry is still in the machines, and all signs point to the scientists simply leaving and not coming back. Things get even more mysterious when the scientists are found out in the tundra, buried neck deep in the snow with burnt corneas and numerous self-inflicted wounds, all in a state of grotesque facial expressions and bodily contortions, suggesting that the scientists all died from fear as opposed to hypothermia. Oh, and they're all naked, with their clothes neatly folded not too far away. But one of the missing scientists is not among the bodies. Could the scientists have been murdered? And if so, what happened to drive them from the research station naked and into the ice? So that's basically the plot of of season four of True Detective. Jude, was there anything else you wanted to add to that?
Mm-mm. No, you're doing a great job, Beth. Are you guys watching the show?
Nope.
Have you ever not even a little Detective?
Bit. Nope.
Nope.
Okay. I've seen clips of the one with...
you haven't even seen season one?
Woody Harrelson and Matthew McConaughey, but never seen it.
Season one is so good.
Yeah. Yes.
I got nothing to say about True Detective.
I've never seen the show.
So I haven't seen it.
It's about... It's about the true.
Okay, but what's the true?
Yeah, what they base this season off of?
Okay, so there are two unsolved mysterious cases from history that they plucked the stuff from. And I want to see if you can kind of like see the parallels in the show.
Are they both based in like the Altic?
No.
Okay.
No. So the first one is based off of a ship from the 1800s called the Mary Celeste. And the Mary Celeste was a merchant vessel that was found abandoned and adrift in the Atlantic Ocean off the Azorean Islands on December 4th, 1872. The ship had sailed out of New York Harbor on Tuesday, November 5th, with eight crew members, along with the captain's wife and three-year-old daughter. It carried a cargo of 1,701 barrels of alcohol. On Wednesday, December 4th, it was found floating derelict midway between the Azores and the coast of Portugal. By the crew of a ship called the De Gratia. When the crew boarded the ship, they found it completely deserted. The sails were partly set and in poor condition, some missing altogether, and much of the ship's rigging was damaged, with ropes hanging loosely over the sides. The main hatch cover was secure, but the fore and lazarette hatches were open, their covers beside them on the deck. The ship's single lifeboat was a small yawl that had apparently been stowed across the main hatch, but it was missing, while the binnacle housing of the ship's compass had shifted from its place with its glass cover broken. There were about 3.5 feet of water in the hold, a significant but not alarming amount of water for a ship that size. A makeshift sounding rod, or a device measuring the amount of water in the hold, was found abandoned on the deck. They found the ship's daily log and the first mate's captain, and its final entry was dated at 8 a.m., on November 25th, 9 days earlier. It recorded the Mary Celeste's position nearly 400 nautical miles from the point where the De Gratia encountered her. The cabin interiors were wet and untidy from the water that had entered through the doorways and skylights, but were otherwise in reasonable order. There were personal items scattered around the captain's cabin, including a sheathed sword under the bed, but most of the ship's papers were missing, along with the captain's navigational instruments. The galley equipment was neatly stowed away. There was no food prepared or under preparation, but there were ample provisions in the stores. There was no obvious signs of fire or violence, and the evidence indicated an orderly departure from the ship by means of the missing lifeboat. However, the crew was never found, and the mystery of what happened to them was never solved.
Question. Was the booze still on board?
Yes. All the booze was on board.
Mm.
Vampires.
Aliens.
This sounds like... Ooh, I like aliens. Mm-hmm. That's cool. This sounds like Last Voyage of the Demeter.
It does.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
They had Dracula on board and he killed everybody and then flew away. Dracula on a boat. I forgot about that. Dracula on a boat.
Us saying it was more fun than actually seeing the movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
the movie was all right. But us saying Dracula on a boat for like 3 months straight was amazing.
Yeah. It's like the Great White Buffalo.
Yeah.
Great
White Buffalo.
Yeah, but there are all these theories about like what could have happened to the crew and why they would abandon ship or where they might have gone afterwards. In all the investigations that preceded this discovery, no one could ever figure out what happened.
Wormhole.
Let's try to figure it out.
Wormhole.
Where were they exactly on the globe?
They were off the coast of Portugal and the Azores Islands.
Okay. All right. That's...
Can you bring up a map of the Bermuda Triangle?
It's not there.
It's pretty far from that.
It's pretty far from that.
I did a horror audiobook that sounds just like this.
Yeah.
This guy was a sailor, and then he disappeared, and then he showed up like 100 years later. Wormhole.
So the big theory was that the fumes from the alcohol that was stored under the deck were getting to the point where basically if you lit like a match, the whole ship could blow up. And so they tried to open the hatches to let the fumes escape. And while they were doing that, they all got into the lifeboat to kind of like be on the side in case there was an explosion. So like they were going to be like in the little dinghy, tethered to the ship, waiting for like all the fumes to like escape. And somehow the rope to the dinghy got cut or broke and they drifted off and they couldn't get back to the ship.
I think a giant octopus.
That was actually one of the theories.
From 20,000 leagues under the sea. Came up and snatched them.
So in the Inquisition following that, people actually floated the idea like maybe a giant octopus ate them.
What would make them think that there were so much fumes from the alcohol that it would cause an explosion? Like, they don't have a way of testing that. Nobody's out there with a freaking like a little air purifier thing going, oh, there's a lot of alcohol on it. Like, it's 1800s,
when
right?
You guys found the derelict boat, did y'all just get immediately high?
I don't know. I like the idea that they all got off for some reason and then they just couldn't get back on, but they didn't have rows. They didn't have a freaking thing to get back to the boat with. Why'd they leave the sails up if that was the case? Yeah. When they take the sails
some
down?
Some of the crew would have stayed on board.
Somebody on a bridge was like, Captain, we have 16 microns of elevated alcohol.
Right? This Geordie up there.
We must abandon the ship and excuse all.
Yeah.
All the noxious.
How long were they all?
Sounds like a Star Trek.
11 parsecs.
11 parsecs. Yeah. What was the best of the universe date?
0.06
Krycons or something like that. Just making shit up. Nah, that's weird. I love these kind of mysteries though. The Azor Islands. There's theories out there that's around where Atlantis used to
be. Aliens got them because they wanted to party.
Mm-hmm. Maybe.
All that booze on the ship.
Well, what was interesting is that all the navigational instruments were gone. So the captain might have taken them into the lifeboat. But if that's the case,
why didn't they show up somewhere?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
How far off the shore were they?
They were like, I don't know.
Could they have rowed
400
back?
Nautical miles from where they were supposed to be.
That's where they found the ship. Mm-hmm. That's not where they like disconnected. Like they could have, if they could have rowed to somewhere, an island or the some coast.
I feel like they would have taken the captain's log too, if they had just evacuated the boat.
It was the first mate's log.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the first mate's found. Yeah.
Captain's log.
Captain's log. Stardate. 0.065. Whatever. I don't know how do Star Trek logs
that's
work?
Too long of a discussion.
Is there an explanation for it though?
What would you say you do here?
Yeah. I keep the date accurate for
Captain. I think it started out as gibberish.
Yeah. And then somebody was like, how do we make this work?
They decided to do something about it. I think
Stardate. Stardate. What's a star date versus like a normal date?
Yeah.
Like an Earth date versus a star date?
There's some theories. Mm. I don't think anybody's ever
really nailed it down.
Really, yeah. Exactly.
I love mysteries like this.
So this mystery is what inspired the Salal research station where all the scientists basically disappeared.
Uh-huh. Okay.
When the police show up, like everything's like where it's supposed to be. It's just a couple days old.
Mm-hmm.
The mayonnaise has turned on the sandwiches that were like, made. The musty smell of the laundry, stuff like that. And so like this was where they kind of pulled that idea from of like people who are in an enclosed space just disappear for no reason. And
ooh, the finale's tonight, isn't it?
It's actually on Friday.
Friday.
All right. So there's a second unsolved mystery.
Okay.
They also pulled from.
Okay.
And it's called the Dyatlov Pass incident.
Okay.
So in 1959, a group of 9 hikers was formed for a skiing expedition across the northern Urals in the Soviet Union. But during their expedition, all the hikers died under uncertain circumstances.
Sasquatch.
The experienced hikers, led by Igor Dyatlov.
I don't trust anyone named Igor.
Yeah, your name is Igor. Immediately, I'm not going with you.
You're a bad dude.
Had established a camp on the eastern slopes of the Kolat Syekol, a mountain of the Soviet Union. One night, something caused them to cut their way out of their tent and flee their campsite while inadequately dressed for the heavy snowfall and sub-zero temperatures. When the group did not report in, a search party found the group's campsite and were baffled when they found the group's badly damaged and abandoned tent. It was empty, and all the group's belongings and shoes had been left behind. Investigators said the tent had been cut open from the inside, and 9 sets of footprints could be followed, which led to the discovery of the first 6 bodies. The first bodies they found were shoeless and dressed only in underwear. The next 3 corpses discovered showed the hikers had died in poses suggesting they were attempting to return to the tent. Finding the remaining 3 travelers took more than 2 months. A medical examination of the first 5 bodies found no injuries that might have led to their deaths, and it was concluded that they had died from hypothermia, though one of the corpses had a small crack in his skull, but it was not bad enough to have been a fatal wound. However, the other 4 bodies had severe wounds, such as major skull damage and major chest fractures. The force required to cause such wounds were comparable to that of a car crash, but none of the bodies had any external wounds associated with the bone fractures,
as though the wounds were created by a high level of pressure.
Aliens.
They also had soft tissue damage to their head and face, and one of the bodies was missing a tongue, eyes, and part of the lips. The medical examiner concluded that the fatal injuries of the three bodies could not have been caused by human beings because the force of the blows had been too strong and no soft tissue damage had been noticed.
So like a concussion, like a concussive force, like a bomb gone off or something?
This is actually really
like
famous.
Like they were trying to beam them up, but they got the tractor beam reversed.
Yeah. And they just pushed them down instead.
Yeah.
In addition, there were no animal tracks in the area to suggest that they were attacked or chased by wildlife. The dead were only partially dressed. Some were found with wrappings and snips of ripped clothes that seemed to have been cut from those who were already dead. Tracks from the campsite showed that all the group members left the campsite of their own accord on foot. The official investigation concluded that the group members had died because of a compelling natural force, like an avalanche, though there was a theory that many of them died from paradoxical undressing, where those suffering from hypothermia removed their clothes in response to perceived feelings of burning, which led to their death by hypothermia. When the inquest was officially ceased, all the investigative files were sent to a secret archive. However, many people don't buy into the official conclusion of the case, as there are still many unexplained aspects to the tragedy that the official explanation doesn't seem to account for. Thus, many consider the case to be unsolved, and the reason why the nine hikers abandoned their camp and ran into the freezing woods to die is still unknown.
Okay, it's probably aliens, but I'm going to try to explain this. If they're camping with a guy named Igor, immediately you're going to die. So
yeah. Also, I'm not getting down to my skivvies in my tent anywhere in Russia.
Right. Fair enough. Most likely, what probably happened is that they got attacked by a abominable snowman. Or they got hypothermia while they were camping and they tried to set up a camp after the effects of hypothermia had already taken place. So when they were inside their tent and they were all getting undressed because they had to take their wet clothes off, cold clothes off. Hunker up together, skin on skin contact. That's how you get warm when you have hypothermia.
Kangaroo style.
But it's too late. It was too late, and the effects already started taking place, and they started freaking losing their minds and getting too hot. They're like, we got to get out of here. So they got out, and they left, and they tried to hike away. Now, the injuries. Now, that's the interesting part. Mm-hmm. If the skin and tissue injuries were post-mortem, that could have easily been some kind of a freaking raccoon or some weird thing, just like ate at them while they were dead. Mm-hmm. It doesn't state in there whether or not that was post-mortem or like if it happened before they died.
I couldn't find any.
Okay. I'm going to assume it's post-mortem.
They said that one guy had like a fracture in his skull, but it wasn't that
bad.
Listen, that's bad.
No, it wasn't that bad. It was that it wasn't bad enough to be a mortal wound.
Right. He has a real bad concussion with a cracked skull. Mm-hmm. So he hit his head. Somehow.
I've had a concussion before.
It hurt.
And that's not cool.
Yeah. No, you got a massive headache. Mm-hmm. The only thing I can't explain is the massive damage to their bone structure without having any soft tissue damage. That's like a concussive force thing. Mm-hmm. It's like nothing touched them, but something like jolted them.
Spaceship.
I'm freaking aliens, right? If it was Sasquatch, they'd have like marks all over them. Mm-hmm. They'd be beat up.
Bumbles bounce.
Yeah. Hey man, you want to go camping with me?
No.
Yeah. The weird thing is that like they were all in their tent and they had to like cut open the tent to leave instead of going through the flap.
They were in a panic.
Yeah, they were in a panic and they couldn't find the zipper.
It's because Sasquatch was out there and couldn't eat him.
You know, dude, you hear some weird shit when you're camping.
I've seen...
This was in the 50s?
I've seen like at least three different television specials about this case.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Documentaries
out there. One of them's like... Okay. What's that one show that's with the unexplained mysteries with Josh something? I don't know. I think he's Indiana Jones.
Oh, I know. He wears the hat all the time. Yeah, I know the guy. I've never watched his stuff, but I know who you're talking about.
But he did something on this, and I think there's a couple other ones out there as well.
You know what? I'm on Google Maps right now. Can you tell me how do you spell that mountain range? Where's that?
Oh, it's out in the middle of nowhere.
Well, I believe you. I want to get my head around like where this is at.
All right. It's Kholat.
That'll probably do it. Yep, that's it. Russia. Let me put satellite view on this. I want to get an idea of where they were at. Oh, they were way out there.
Yeah,
yeah. It was an expedition. They were
exploring.
God,
I was born in the wrong generation, man. I want to explore some shit. You have to zoom way out before you see any recognizable land masses. Yeah. Okay, so they're on the western side of Russia, then more towards Eastern Europe. Not, you know, Finland, Sweden, they're up in that top area over there. That's interesting. Can I watch these documentaries with you? I want to watch them with you.
Why?
Because it'd be more fun. I don't watch it by myself. That's boring. Definitely aliens or Sasquatches, though. For sure.
So one of the prevailing theories is that the Russian military was doing some type of of exercise where airplanes would be like dropping bombs, but the bombs were set to explode like before they hit the ground so that it wouldn't cause any like, you know, damage.
Yeah.
And the force of the blasts caused them to panic and flee. And as the blasts were going off, they'd get these impact wounds from, you know, the shockwaves of the explosions. According to official records, there were no military exercises going on in that region.
Do you trust Soviet Union records to tell you? Sure, there's no bombs going off in the middle of nowhere in Russia.
There's no radiated parts of the desert north of us either.
No, not at all. You know.
No. But there was, I think one of the hikers did have clothing that had like traces of radiation on it.
So maybe it was a bomb. Maybe they were dropping bombs out there in the middle of nowhere and these guys were just like in a real bad predicament. And
well, also, so the official theory is that they set up their tent too close to a place where basically an avalanche happened. And there was like a slab, like an ice slab that fell, and they thought that an avalanche was about to start.
So they ran trying to get away from it.
Yeah. And then like they got into the woods and they got disoriented and they couldn't find their way back to the tent. And, you know, they were all in various state of undress. And so like they just got lost and froze to death.
That doesn't explain the injuries still though. Yeah. That would explain why they would leave their tent. That makes sense. But the injuries is the most important part.
Yeah.
Like how do they break ribs and bones without having any external damage?
Aliens.
Yeah. Jude, how do you think that compares to the show?
The whole finding them frozen and not being able to, it's very similar to the show. Yeah. Cool. Very spooky.
Yeah. Still unexplained.
So does the show, cause I haven't seen any of the seasons. Do they lean on the supernatural?
No,
no,
not at all.
So the show True Detective, it's about cops who are in various states of like, pessimism, I guess you could say.
Like they're just old ornery detectives?
Not necessarily old, but they're
they've been through some shit.
They're disillusioned with the system.
Yeah. And, but they're trying to track down a killer.
Well, every season is about a case that these detectives who are basically, you know, not very good detectives become obsessed with, and it follows them throughout the course of their life as they eventually solve it. And not all the seasons have like a happy ending to them, but it's basically meant to be like, okay, these are the true detectives because like they can't let this case go. And the first three seasons were very straightforward, like police procedural stuff. And this season's been getting some criticism because it seems like they're including supernatural elements.
Going down a more X-Files kind of vibe?
Not necessarily X-Files, but like there's a lot of like hallucinations and like weird stuff. And it takes place in a town in Alaska where during like the 60 days of night type thing. So like the fan base has been kind of split over this season because there are some parts of it that are really interesting. Then there are some parts of it that are just like super, super stupid. It's a very short season too. It's only like six episodes and the finale is coming out really soon. But I just found it interesting that, so like this is the first season of the show that didn't have the creator of the show involved in it. And so a lot of people have been making like theory videos on YouTube about like, you know, like where all the clues are pointing and like, you know, and the setup for this mystery is like super interesting. Like you're just like, how did this happen? Why did this happen? So on and so forth. But because there's only one episode left, people are like, they're not going to give us an answer.
I hate that. Oh God, I hate when that happens to a TV show and you're watching it and you're like, how many episodes
like
do we have?
Lost?
One episode? They're not going to wrap all this up in one episode. God damn. It's going to be like part two.
Is there going to be like a winter season and a fall season finale?
No,
or something?
No. But one of the frustrating parts of all this is that they spend so much time in every episode showing us characters who are all assholes and their like daily lives and stuff like that.
They're all terrible people.
So
in the comments, Jim Alaska said, as an Alaskan, I disavow this show. It's horrible. And I totally feel that because when they make movies about Las Vegas and get it wrong, I'm like, fuck this movie.
Which is every,
I still
every
like the show,
movie.
But I live in the desert, so I'm into it.
Every movie about Vegas is wrong.
Yeah.
Except for maybe Casino.
I love movies where there's like a research station in the middle of an Arctic wasteland.
Yeah.
And people are trapped there.
Yeah.
I love those types of shows.
The isolation, it brings a certain type of thing to it. So what are the criticisms? Because I haven't seen the show. All I've seen is people talk about it on like Twitter and stuff. And a lot of people are saying that this season is like, I saw one tweet. I don't know who said it, but somebody was like, there's only one season of True Detective and it's the first season.
The first one.
Everything else is shit.
Yeah.
And I'm curious. I'm like,
I've never watched any of the other seasons, I love season one.
Yeah.
You have seen season two with me.
I have no memory of having watched
That's normal for you though.
Yeah.
It was before we moved in together.
Okay.
But the first season of True Detective is like considered a masterpiece of television. Like it was a really good season. And since then, the second season wasn't all that great, but the third season I thought was pretty good. This season, I'm kind of iffy on.
Hmm.
Yeah. But if you haven't seen the first season of True Detective, you really are missing out.
Okay.
Because it's an excellent TV show.
I need to put it on my list.
Plus, it's got Matthew McConaughey.
I love Matthew McConaughey. I'll watch anything with that guy in it.
You won't watch this show, apparently.
I didn't say I was going to. I just said I haven't had a chance yet. That's all. I don't have to watch shit when it first comes out. I can watch it whenever I want. All right. Well, is that it? Is that the...
Those are the true stories of the... inspirations
true
behind
detective
the
detective true stories.
True detective true stories.
True
All right, cool.
stories.
I dig it. I like the true stories more than I like the TV show stuff, though. That I'll watch a documentary about a weird shit that happens in the woods before I watch a based on TV show or movie. You know what I mean? Like, it's always like, oh, this is based on this mystery. I'm like, oh, I'm just gonna go watch that because that seems more interesting to me. All right, let's see here. Yeah, Jim Alaska says he disavows the show. Okay, fair enough. Mm-hmm. He says Vegas is awesome. Sure. That's your opinion.
Fine. I love living here. I love that we have a 24-hour city.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do miss that.
I love living here.
When I go places...
I don't like this trip.
When I go places and they're like, we close at 7. And I'm like, what?
What do you mean?
What do you mean you close at 7? And I go to a gas station. I'm like, hey, you guys got beer? And they're like, we don't serve alcohol at a gas station.
Or
like,
on Sunday? You ever go to a town that they don't sell alcohol on a Sunday?
Anywhere, Utah, USA, you go and you're like, what do you mean you don't serve? No, we close at 5 p.m. on Sunday.
Yeah.
There's no alcohol.
Yeah.
We're like, bro.
I went on a road trip with some friends to California, and I forget what town we were staying in, but we like got into town at like 10 at night.
Right.
We were all starving. We stopped to get gas, and we were like, yeah, let's just go like hit a Denny's or something. No.
No. You go home.
I was like, Denny's is open 24 hours.
Not here.
Yeah. Not here.
you know what isn't open 24 hours in Vegas?
IHOP.
No.
Oh!
But that was
Black Bear Diner.
That was during the pandemic, though.
No. The police.
Okay.
Facts. Fucking facts.
The police shut. They're open from 9 to 5.
The detective's office.
9 to 5, motherfuckers. Call somebody else.
You're going to have to come back tomorrow. Yeah. That is true.
The detectives only work 2 days a week.
Yeah.
And as long as you rob people after 6 p.m., you're fine.
Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah. Real quick, $5 super chat from Astro Nerd Boy. Northern Exposure is the only Alaska show I like. I haven't seen that.
That's a fun show.
Is it like Discovery Channel? What is it?
Like it was 90s. An old
quirky.
It was a quirky dramedy from the
90s.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, it's good.
You know what I want? What's that show where they follow people that live above the Arctic Circle? Oh shit, what's that show called? But I can't remember what it's called, but it's on like Discovery or History Channel or something like that. But they follow this lady who lives up in the middle of freaking nowhere by herself at like a random outpost in the Arctic Circle somewhere. And she's just like a stopping point for these other places to get like supply up and stuff like that. And she's out there like fighting polar bears by herself.
Mm-hmm.
I want to meet that woman. That is a freaking salt of the earth, hard woman. She freaking, you do not fuck around with
You're
that
so
lady.
Weird, dude.
I love it. It was You're so weird. Cool. Okay. So the last thing that I wanted to bring up before we close out the show. We're going on 2 hours, guys, and we have a lot of technical difficulties, so we do appreciate you guys hanging out
with
us.
Thanks for hanging in there.
The last thing, I want to make sure we covered this because it involves a friend of ours, Chris Gore. Elon Musk retweets Chris Gore's video about Amazon Studios diversity, equity, and inclusion rules that will end creativity. I watched Chris Gore's video. It was very, go check it out. We might be able to put it in the description if we haven't already. It's a great video done by Chris and what's his partner's name again?
Alan.
Thank you. But I was just shocked. I'm scrolling through Instagram and Elon Musk and then it says Chris Gore. And I'm like, what? No way. So I thought it was super cool. But yeah. It brings up the idea, and this has been creeping up in social media a lot, where Elon Musk is like poking around Disney. Obviously, he's got that super famous quote where he's like, go fuck yourself
he's one of us.
He's hardcore. Like, this is nonsense. You guys are making some terrible calls. Let's reset the clock a little bit and fix some of this shit. He was, Kadesh will know the guy, but he was working with or hanging out with somebody, another big investor who's trying to buy up Disney stock. Is that correct, Kadesh?
Yes.
Okay.
His name is Nelson Peltz.
Yep. Nelson Peltz.
He's an activist investor.
Okay.
Who is basically trying to get control of the Disney board so that he can right the ship, because basically, you know, Disney's a great company, but they've been going down the wrong path for so long that it's, the stock price has just been going down, 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 down.
Right.
Hydra has taken over Disney.
Yeah. Hell, Hydra. But actually, that brings up the activist investors. That's what you called him?
Yeah.
Well, because
that's the name of him.
Iger put out a video recently, yesterday or today, saying that the activist investors are going to take the company in a wrong direction.
Well,
and is he calling this Nelson Peltz guy out directly?
Yeah, there's a war going on. They know each other.
Yeah,
they hate each other.
Yeah.
Yeah, but activist investor isn't what you think it is. Mm. Like Nelson Peltz is a well-known activist investor, and what he's advocating for is the stockholders.
Mm-hmm.
So basically, when they say he's an activist, he's not like a 60s radical who's going to go in there.
He's not Bernie Sanders trying to buy up Disney.
Exactly.
He's not Marty Bird in the Ozarks.
Exactly. So like what he does is he goes in there and he basically gets rid of all the bad actors who are causing the stock price to go down.
Mm-hmm.
He installs his own people and gets it so that the stock price starts going up again.
Mm-hmm.
And that's his activism.
Okay.
Basically,
he wants everybody to make money.
Exactly.
Himself included.
Exactly. And he wants companies to be healthy. And so like he takes over, like he does hostile takeovers of companies that aren't doing well,
mm-hmm.
and then fixes the problems so that the investors can get their money back.
Oh, that's interesting. I like that kind of activism. Maybe. I don't know.
Hostile takeover.
Yeah. But it was just interesting because Elon's bouncing around all over the place. Like you said, he's one of us, right? He's calling these people out for all this DEI stuff.
I resent you saying that. Don't fucking lump me in with that whack.
Well, I know you're like very hesitant to trust anybody who's making these kind of moves. I get it. I understand where your perspective.
I'm not one of anyone.
I do get it. I do. You're an outsider.
Yeah.
But you do agree that
fucking one of us, me.
But you do agree that movies, especially Disney, has been going in a real weird direction lately. And they're not a good direction.
Movies before either. So
fair enough.
I'm out.
So this idea that, okay, so now Amazon has got the eyeball of Elon as well. And this whole DEI stuff is taking companies in a terrible direction. All the content that they've been putting out is like terrible. I wanted to talk about Halo this week too, but we might push that off until later. Because it's guilty of the same things.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, let's just throw whatever we can at there, check all the boxes and make a terrible show. And nobody wants to watch it.
Yeah, basically, this week alone, Elon has come out on his X feed and showcased like a check sheet for Amazon Studios about like how much diversity has to be included in all their stuff.
30% of the characters have to meet these requirements. And
Disney has something similar to this. And basically the Film Threat article that Chris Gore is behind analyzes these things and talks about how detrimental they are to the creative process, because you're shoehorning in all this stuff. It's basically affirmative action for Hollywood.
Sure.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And Elon is not having any of it. But a lot of this was born out of Bob Iger coming back and pulling Disney's advertising and accusing Elon of being an anti-Semite. And that's where you got that famous, go F yourself moment when Elon was on stage. Like, Bob Iger.
You're going to blackmail me with advertising money? Go fuck yourself.
Yeah. And Bob Iger was in the audience because he had just been on stage
with
Elon. And so Elon basically is now cozying up to Nelson Peltz. And there's rumors that he may help fund Nelson's takeover of the board to get more board seats. Nelson Peltz has already teamed up with Ike Perlmutter, who was the head of Marvel, and he got kind of shunted aside, but he has tons of shareholder stock, voting stock.
So if they get above 51%, then they can kick Iger out, right? Is that how this is going to work?
If they get control of the board, they can replace Iger with someone.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially, under Iger's regime,
Disney has basically like fallen from grace.
Iger and Chapek. What's that? The last dude's name that got fired?
Bob Chapek. He was never really like in charge of anything. Like Bob was still like.
Yeah, he was like puppet mastering it, right?
Yeah. And so basically it's the fight. It's a fight for the soul of Disney is essentially what it comes down to. But the fact that Elon has been laser targeted at kind of like shooting across the bow of Disney. That
pretty wild.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah. Like he didn't just retweet something from Chris. He actually took a link to the film threat video and did a tweet about it and basically said, watch this video.
Yeah.
Are we able to actually call up to see like how many views that
video has? Yeah, absolutely. I got it pulled up right here. Let me see how many. How can I
get it? Go to YouTube.
There we go. I checked last. It had like the first time I clicked on it had like 29,000. 71,000 right now sitting at it with 3 days of runtime. So yeah, good deal. I know Jude's nervous about Elon Musk, but I just love that.
Quit giving him power.
It's not that. It's the eyeballs that he brings to the table. It's like, hey, look at this situation. It's not necessarily like, yeah, we 100% agree with everything Elon does. I don't know. He could do something later and I'd be like, oh, that's shitty. I don't like the Cybertruck. Does that count? I think it's a piece of shit.
I mean, the crazy thing about Elon is that he's actually created the ability to have discussions again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like it's because of Elon and his control of X that, Tucker was able to go to Russia and have like a conversation with Putin and people could actually watch it.
Yeah. But I am curious. So about the numbers thing. So Elon's tweet has 16.4 million views. If people watch it on X, does it count as a watch from YouTube? Do they track that across the platform?
I believe they do.
Okay. Anyway, but it has 48,000 likes. So 71,000 views that about. Okay. So I guess that tracks, but something needs to happen. We all agree with that. Something needs to change because the direction of content right now from across the board, from Amazon and with the Rings of Power and Paramount Plus with Halo and like all these major platforms making these shows that are just like, just not fucking good. And Disney especially is really guilty of this. So to see people starting to make moves to like course correct things, it's got my eyeballs. It's got my attention for sure. I'm all for it. Freaking smack them around a little bit. See what happens. Shake some shit up.
Well, it's going to be interesting because we're going into an election season. And in the previous election season, every single social media platform was secretly being controlled by the government. Yeah. There's actual
evidence. That's factual. Of this. Yeah. That's not a conspiracy theory. That's real.
Exactly. And so now one of the biggest ones is no longer under the control of the government.
Right.
And I think most recently, if you look at like Tucker's interview with Putin, Facebook actually throttled the reach.
Of course it did.
Of the sharing of that. At the request of the White House.
I'm sure. Yeah. Shit's weird, man.
It's crazy.
Yeah. But anyway, I was super happy for Chris Gore. I thought it was really cool.
Yeah,
he got that many eyeballs. He's got the attention of somebody like Elon Musk, who are all in that same vein culturally of like, hey, we've got to fix this shit. I'm here for it. So shout out to those guys. Good job, Chris. Great video too, by the way.
Oh, and Elon's been trolling Disney.
Dude, can we talk about the tweet? It says these nuts.
These nuts.
Dude, it's Elon. It's the Disney logo flipped upside down. It says these nuts. And I was just like, God damn it, dude. And that's all it was. No comment, no commentary, just here's a meme. Fuck you.
Also, like Elon like suing Disney through the surrogate of Gina Carano.
The Gina Carano thing. Yeah, dude, he's going after these people hard. I'm here for it. Let's see what happens.
He's going to take their power within himself and then he's going to become too powerful.
Dude, I don't know why you're so worried about this. I thought you would be loving to see the controlling powers being rattled. I thought you'd be all for that.
The powers that be have always been the powers that be.
You don't think nothing's changing?
They're rocking the fucking boat.
Rocket.
And then they're going to shut off all of our Matrix pods.
Yeah, maybe.
And it's just a new fucking guy for people to worship. And the power is going to transfer to him. And then he's going to turn out to be a fucking weirdo wacko.
We already know that.
By the way, he is.
We know that.
And people are just going to keep worshiping him and keep giving him power. And then all of a sudden they're going to go, you should run for president. And then he's going
to start
the whole fucking thing over again.
He can't. He's not from here. You're not one of us.
Have to be an American-born citizen.
Yeah. Wait until they change that. Then all bets are
off. Well, then Arnold can run.
Arnold?
Yeah.
Did you see his freaking...
Arnold.
Be a good neighbor. No, neighbor.
I love that.
That was the best commercial of the Super Bowl.
Yeah, that was the easiest one. Yeah.
The chopper. It's pronounced chopper.
No, get to the chopper.
Had to bring Danny DeVito in.
Yeah. They had a lot of cameos. There was somebody else in that one too. I can't remember who it was. At the very, very end.
I haven't seen that one yet.
You haven't seen that?
No.
It's good. Obvious stand-in for Arnold though. Every time you see that him from the camera from the back or over the shoulder, totally not him.
Yeah.
So the different body type altogether. But then all the front facing stuff is obviously him in some soundstage doing something. Funny stuff. All right, folks. Well, that is our 2-hour show. Again, I do apologize for all the issues that we've been having. Thank you so much for hanging in there with us. Despite that, we will troubleshoot what's going on. Obviously, I was blaming Alienware. Apparently, that's not the problem. So I apologize to...
The aliens weren't responsible for the mystery.
I apologize to the shitty Dell computer in the other room that we replaced because it wasn't the problem. We'll figure it out. V, you got any final words? Say goodbye to the chat.
I don't.
You don't?
I don't.
Okay.
Just...
Thanks, buddy.
I don't know.
Thanks for helping me. I really appreciate that.
I felt a little checked out the last half hour.
Yeah, I understand why.
But it's cool.
Yeah.
You don't understand anything. What are you understanding?
I get you.
Okay.
I get you.
I get you too.
The chat gets you too.
Okay.
I understand.
Okay,
you.
Boo. That's all right.
William Forbes, I will have that Sasquatch shirt done today. I'm actually going to set an alarm right now. I'm going to go home and I'm going to do it. And I will post it. We'll put it on our store. It'll be great. Buy it. We'll discount it too.
See everybody on Saturday.
He's checked out. Yeah, he'll see you next week.
See you whenever.
Jude, any final words of warning to the people?
I'm just loving V right now. He's just like, what is even the world?
Whatever, man.
What is Earth? What's a weird word? Thank you for everyone who hung in there with us during our technical difficulties. Sorry about all of that. Loving the chat. Thanks for everybody who's in the chat. Thanks for all of the super chats and the 5 memberships that
it's awesome.
Shit, who was it?
There's Nobody G.
Nobody G. Yeah, thanks so much for that. We love you guys. We do this for you, and thanks for coming in here with us every Tuesday.
Yep. And Kadesh,
I'm gonna go listen to some Creed.
With arms wide open.
Should we let's do it together?
Yeah. I said, should we do karaoke? You want to come over tonight and do karaoke?
Yeah, a Creed karaoke? Dude, a Creed karaoke
night? That's what it takes.
Oh, I think if we get Tom in there too, we could have a real good time.
Tom
Creed
rules. Karaoke. He does.
I believe him. He's Japanese.
Yeah.
Yeah, he does. Okay, just final words of advice to people and say goodbye.
Thank you for tuning in and bearing with us as we're dealing with our technical difficulties. Mm. I'm still dealing with them.
So. It's kind of a clusterfuck.
It's a little bit of a fuck up show right now. I feel really bad. It happened like 4 times. That's it?
Oh boy.
Yep. Cool. All right, guys. On that incredible disappointment, we're going to end the show. See you next week.